We have our sermon series on the mothers of our faith. We've gone through these characters, these women who were in the Bible, Sarah, Deborah, Hannah, Esther, and Ruth. We've spent the last four Sundays on Ruth. This is our fourth Sunday on Ruth. And I want to thank the ladies of our church who spoke during this series, Diana, Danya, Abby, Stacy, Reagan, and Vicky, all were there. Can we thank them? And yeah, it was fantastic. Each and every one of you, thank you for doing that. And I've asked them to serve communion for us at the end of the service today. So this is it for Ruth. I've enjoyed diving deep into her life. I think I mentioned that I had a sermon series planned for her since the pandemic. I've had her there, and I just keep pushing her to later and later and later, and then we decided on this one. I was like, this is the time, and this is the sermon I've been most looking forward to share with you today. So here's just an overview of where we've been a little bit with Ruth, just Ruth herself. Week one, we talked about her courage to stand alone. And week two is her sacrificial love. Last week, she's welcomed as family. And then today we're going to look at how she was redeemed as a foundation of faith. So last week in Ruth chapter 3, we saw Boaz as the kinsman redeemer. I'm trying to just kind of catch you up on the life and times of Ruth herself and her story. Kinsman redeemer. I just want to look at that word redeemed. We really, in our culture, only know that word unless it's a churchy term or it's a coupon, right? Like, you can redeem a coupon. That's what we know about it. But here's a two definitions. One is the action of saving or being saved from sin or error or evil. So it's being saved from something. Here's the second thing. The action of regaining or gaining possession of something in exchange for payment or clearing a debt. That's the coupon version, right? Like, I'm exchanging this, you're giving me some value back. Keep that in mind, but also keep this in mind, that redemption is an act that brings value to negative circumstances and experiences in life. So you might have gone through terrible experiences of life, but it can be redeemed for something good, that something good came out of this bad, negative situation, and therefore it has been redeemed. It's just another way of looking at it. And so we have Ruth, who has married into a family that has moved to her neck of the woods. They left their country, they left Israel, moved to Moab, where she lives, and she marries one of these boys. And then that husband of hers dies, and then her brother-in-law dies, and then her father-in-law dies, leaving her sister-in-law, and her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law, Naomi, says, you guys go back home. I'm going to go back home. Let's just call it a day. Water under the bridge. We gave it a shot. Everybody died. Let's go home. Well, the sister-in-law goes home. Ruth goes with Naomi, now back to an unfamiliar territory, back to Israel, foreign land, foreign people, may not even speak the same language. And here they are, Ruth and Naomi, mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, with nothing. And so she starts working the fields. And she starts gleaning the fields, going behind the reapers of the harvest, and just gathering what she can. And it turns out, it just happens to turn out, by the will of God, it just happens to be that the field she chose was the property of a kinsman redeemer, a guy who is supposed to redeem people in his family line that have gone on hard times. His name was Boaz. So that kind of catches you up to chapter 3. Now we're going to read through chapter 4 and discover what happens here. So here's chapter 4, Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate, that's the city gate. Well, I should just recap a little bit of chapter 3. So Naomi tells Ruth, like, hey, this Boaz guy, he's kind of nice, right? Like, maybe you should think about Boaz. Like, you know, Boaz. And he's a kinsman redeemer, so it's helpful. And she gives Ruth these instructions. go at night. He's threshing barley out at the fields, right, outside of town. Go at night after he's had a little drink and had a little food. Watch him. Don't reveal yourself. Don't show up. Just kind of watch him. See where he lays down for the night, because he's going to sleep on his pile of barley to protect it from thieves that might come during night. During the night, then, go and lay at his feet. It's so weird to us, isn't it? Like, that's just so strange. But that's what she does. So she goes and lays at his feet. Around midnight, he stirs a little bit. He's like, what the heck? Who are you at my feet? And now remember, he's drunk and he's got weapons because he's protecting his pile of stuff. This could go terribly wrong, but it doesn't. She says, it's me, Ruth, I'm your servant. And she's put herself in a position of submission, all right? In a place where she puts herself like, I will do what you say. I'm at your mercy. Because she's putting herself in a place like, you're my kinsman redeemer. I'd love for you to love me. And he says, go back to sleep. We'll take care of it in the morning. And then he wakes her up before it's light out. He's like, get out of here before people see you, because then they'll talk. So then he says, I'll take care of this matter. And Naomi says, he's going to take care of it today. So now is today. And he goes to the city gates, where stuff happens in the city. He's at the city gates. He sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer. Oh, yeah, there's this other thing. Boaz says, I'm not the first one. There is another. There's another person ahead of me that can redeem you. Let's check with that guy first. Okay, that's now I'm caught up speed, I hope. Now, Boaz had gone up to the gate, and he sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken, the one who's ahead of him in line, Boaz said, that guy comes by, and Boaz said, turn aside, friend. Sit down here. And so he turned aside and he sat down. And so when someone calls you friend, it's guaranteed they don't know your name. I do that trick all the time. Like, hey, champ. What's up, bub? How's it going, sport? But Boaz for sure knew this guy's name, because he knew there was a relative that was closer to Ruth's family than Boaz was. And so Boaz knew the name, but the writer doesn't include it. The writer wrote the Hebrew equivalent of, hey, so-and-so. That's what he called this guy. Hey, so-and-so. And I love what this commentator said about this little episode. He says, doubtless Boaz both knew his name and called him by it, but it is omitted because the writer, partly because it was unnecessary, omitted by the writer, partly because it was unnecessary to know it. We don't need to know the name. And principally, in a way of contempt, as is usual, and just punishment upon him, that he would not preserve his brother's name, might lose his own name, and be buried in the grave of perpetual oblivion. Because this guy should have been the one to redeem the family. He chose not to do it. Not only did he not preserve his brother's name, he lost his own. And now we have no clue who that was. So they're at the city gate. There's Boaz. There's this family member who's closer. And so the city gate's like this courtroom and chamber of commerce all in one. This was where the movers and shakers hung out. So that's where Boaz went. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city, and he said, sit down here. So they sat down. Then he said to the Redeemer, Naomi, who's come back from the country of Moab, is selling a parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. That would have been her husband, Naomi's husband that died. So I thought I'd tell you of it and say, buy this in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. And if you will redeem it, then redeem it. But if you'll not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you. And so the guy says, I will redeem it. He says, I'll redeem it. So Boaz is doing the fair thing. He, just like he told Ruth that he would do, he'd give that relative closer to him a fair shot at redeeming them. But Boaz only talks about property. He's only talking about land at this point. I got this field. Naomi's going to sell it. It's mine if you don't take it, but it's yours if you take it. And of course, this nameless person agrees. Like, who wouldn't want this property, right? Like, heck yeah, I'll take it. Have more land? Sure. And he knew that he would have to take care of Naomi. Naomi came along with the land. She's an old lady. Ah, no, No big deal. We can take care of Naomi. Sure, why not? Who wouldn't do that? Then, here's what verse 5 says. Then Boaz says, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. You see, the kinsman redeemer was there to perpetuate the name of that family. Naomi's an old lady. She's kind of done having family. Oh, but there's this Ruth who you're going to have more kids with Ruth, and that they won't be yours. They're going to be Elimelech's grandkids, and to perpetuate Elimelech. You got to redeem Ruth too. You have to preserve the dead relative's inheritance. He needs to marry Ruth and have kids with her. They wouldn't be his kids. They'd be his dead relative's kids, and all of the inherited property would go with that family line. And then verse 6, the redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. You take my right of redemption for yourself. I cannot redeem it. So he's like, that's a little too much. I didn't realize Ruth was in the picture on this. Ruth's cool and all, but I'm not doing all that. I don't think it's a good idea for me to walk home with a new wife today. My wife would be a little upset, is what he's saying. Mine probably would too. So he declines his responsibility, relegating himself to anonymity and leaving the door open for Boaz to come in and do what he wanted to do all along. It's kind of an odd strategy, isn't it? He did the thing that would be most pleasing first. He's like, hey, take this land. Yeah, I'll take the land. But also comes Ruth with it. Oh, wait a minute. Time out. I didn't realize that. So, no, I don't need that. Little dangerous way to get what he wanted. We might even call that foolish. But keep in mind that foolish plan that he had paid off. Here's verse 7. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. So, here's what they were going to do because of this act that they have agreed to. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal, he'd take his shoe off, and give it to the other person, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel. Like, okay, here's my shoe. That was what they did. Like, hopefully they had the same size feet. I don't know. Actually, it doesn't say anything about an exchange. It just says the one gave to the other. It's possible that it was an exchange, though. So, verse 8, when the redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders of all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. That would be Elimelech's two sons. Also, Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, and I have bought to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You all are witnesses this day. But Boaz is so cool. He's like, y'all saw that, right? You see that? We did this properly. Anybody here, take notes. Write it down in the minutes of the meeting. We did this right. No one's going to come after me after this because we did it correctly. He's got my shoe. All right? Here's verse 11. Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. So they confirmed it. But it would have been a huge celebration. I don't think they would be like, we are witnesses. You know, they were celebrating this thing. I think the people were excited for this thing to happen. They've been watching Ruth. They've been watching Boaz all along. They're like, kind of fits. This looks like a good match here. Let's celebrate this thing. So I think they saw that this was happening. And I don't know that they had the romantic kind of thing like we think of when there's this love story happening here. I don't know that it's happening like that. But I'm sure it could have happened that way. But I'm sure that in this honor and shame culture, that this was built on responsibility and duty, and everybody was happy that this was happening. Love was at the core of this relationship, but I don't know if it was in love like what we think of today. Here's verse 11. Then all the people were at the gate, and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem." Renowned in Bethlehem. What else do we know about Bethlehem? What happened in Bethlehem? Yeah. Oh, little town of Bethlehem. Yeah. Now, this was taking place 400 to 600 years-ish before Jesus entered into the world in Bethlehem. And they're proclaiming an announcement of blessing on Bethlehem all the way back here. Let me keep reading, verse 12. "And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring of the Lord will give you by this woman." It's just talking about some Old Testament characters, like, hey, they were great, may you be great too. "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went in to her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him.' And then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse." What a beautiful picture how this story has turned out. Everything comes around the way it should have been. Ruth is married. Naomi has a family. There's a son born to the family. But get this, none of this would have happened. None of it would have happened if two women hadn't been bold in following God's design for their lives. They had to be bold and do the thing God had designed them to do. Naomi's husband Elimelech was the one who had left Bethlehem and gone to Moab. He was the one who left this territory. Now, there was a famine. There's reasons why they left their property. They left their home to go to another place. That's where their sons met their wives. And then after their deaths, it was Naomi that said, "Let's go back. Let's go back to the place where God's people are. Let's go back to the promised land." So she returned home, and Ruth went with her. And there's something powerful about going home. Last week we talked about being welcomed as family, creating a sense of home. We need a home, a place where peace just passes understanding. Like, this is home for us, a place where we can just be the people of God. And Naomi went there. And when she got there, she realized eventually that Boaz created a home for her and for Ruth. But it couldn't have happened unless Naomi, a little old lady, hadn't been bold enough to do the thing God was calling her to do. There might be a lesson in there for women of a certain age. God's not done with you yet. God is not finished with you. God is not through with you. Your time is not done yet. You still have ministry left in you. You have things that the community around you needs. And God has probably been talking to you for a long time before you heard that come out of my mouth and before this message that I wrote was ever even written. God's been talking to you, and it's time to respond, and it's time to be bold. God's not done with you yet. And then look what her neighborhood did. Verse 17. "And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, 'A son has been born to Naomi.' They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse." Jesse was the father of David, King David, that we know of in the Bible. "And now these are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Abinadab. Abinadab fathered Nahshon. Nahshon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse. And Jesse fathered David." And that's probably, to me, one of the coolest parts of the story. Obed fathered Jesse. Jesse fathered King David. Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. That's so cool. And we're outside looking in. We see Ruth becoming redeemed. She was restored. and she's installed as a primary character in God's story for the world, the entire world. God did this through a man named Boaz. Boaz is the kinsman redeemer. And the truly astonishing historical significance of Ruth for our Christian faith in Jesus is that the whole reason we know about Bethlehem is because of Jesus. Mary and Joseph had to go back to their homeland, the city of David, King David in the Bible. That was their lineage, King David. Mary and Joseph had to go there for taxing reasons, and they had to be registered and all that. But we see in this a historical line, Matthew chapter 1 names Ruth as one of the historical characters in the line of Jesus. Through Boaz, we see a picture of God's redemptive work that happened through Jesus Christ. The kinsman redeemer had to be a family member. Jesus added humanity to his deity so he could be our kinsman to redeem us. The kinsman redeemer had the duty of buying family members out of slavery. Jesus redeemed us from our slavery to sin and death. The kinsman redeemer was to Ruth not motivated by self-interest, but motivated by love for Ruth. Jesus redeems us out of his love for us. Boaz, as kinsman redeemer for Ruth, had to plan to redeem Ruth unto himself. And some might have thought that plan that he did was foolish. Boaz, you kind of let off on that wrong. That's nuts to do it that way. Jesus has a plan to redeem us as well. Some think that plan is foolish too. You're going to save humanity by dying on the cross? That doesn't look like strength to me. Yet the plan works, and it's a glorious plan that blesses us. Boaz, as kinsman redeemer to Ruth, took her as his bride. The people Jesus has redeemed are called the bride of Christ. Boaz, as kinsman redeemer to Ruth, provided a glorious destiny for Ruth. Jesus, as our redeemer, provides a glorious destiny for us. Boaz mimics the role of Jesus as kinsman redeemer, and that's why Jesus became a man. God could have sent an angel to save us, but the angel would not have been our kinsman. A good prophet, a great priest, could have been our kinsman, but his own sin would have disqualified him as our Redeemer. Only Jesus, the eternal God, who added humanity to his deity, can be both kinsman and redeemer for all of us human beings. Jesus is our kinsman redeemer. Jesus is the fulfillment of God's plan for the redemption of the world. And Ruth played not so small a role in that plan, all because a woman decided to respond to God's call on her life 1,200 years before. Ruth's redemption is playing a redemptive role in the world through Jesus Christ. We've got a choice. It's the same choice Naomi and Ruth had. Maybe not in these words, but they had this choice and we have this choice as well. We can go back to culture, to the culture that we're familiar with, to the language that we're used to. We could try to get out of this world what we can for ourselves. Or we can take God's path of redemption out of the physical world and into the kingdom world and see what God's blessings may have in store for us in his plan. You don't know what your decisions today make for 1,200 years down the road. Ruth just decided to go glean a field, and look where it put her. Look where it puts us and impacts us today. Where do you find yourself in God's plan for redeeming the world? You're living in a world that's desperate for redemption. We must have redemption, and you are part of the plan to redeem it for good. And if you're standing right now in need of redemption, I want to tell you, that God has a plan for you. And that plan is named Jesus. Jesus has come to redeem you. We're going to take communion this morning, and it's probably the best, most real world, physical example of redemption that we can see, because Christ gave of himself completely in something that was terribly negative. He died. Something that was that looked like defeat turned into great victory for us. And so we know on the night that Jesus was betrayed, the night of the Last Supper, after the supper was over, he took bread and he broke the bread. He gave thanks and he said, "This is my body. Every time you take of this, do it in remembrance of me." And likewise, he took the cup and he poured it out. He said, "This is my blood. Every time you take of this, do it in remembrance of me." And so, God, as we take these elements of bread and cup, we ask that you pour out your Holy Spirit upon them so that for us, they might be your body and your blood, and that it might give us spiritual nourishment, that through them we might be the body of Christ in the world, sent to redeem the world as you sent your Son, Jesus Christ, to redeem us. Lord, redeem these physical gifts of juice and bread, and might they be that nourishment that we need in our lives. We pray this in Jesus' name.